line. Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IMS, XQuery, and XML database. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how new IMS on-demand technologies are enabling businesses to use previously existing or new IMS database and treat existing native IMS records as collections of valid XML documents without changing them. The speaker for today's teleconference is Christopher Holz, IMS XML Database and SOA Enablement Software Designer. At this time, I'd like to hand it over to our speaker.
All right. Well, thank you very much. My name is Chris Holz, and I've worked on IMS XML Database now for several years, and that's what we're going to be talking about. And this is a really exciting topic. I think it joins two areas that are often thought of as being fairly opposite, which is IMS, a 40-year-old database with priorities around integrity, stability, and performance, and really a proven technology, with what's now the latest in the industry for databases, which is XML databases, which really is the cutting edge. As you'll see, these two technologies are really very similar, and as we go over that, you'll see why and how, especially why I think IMS is suited very well for this whole new XML database area. So going on, the second slide is a disclaimer, and I hope you all go back and read that thoroughly. Go on to slide 3. What I want to do is kind of talk about the first several 8 or 9 slides, talk about what XML is, XML schemas, some vocabulary that I'll use throughout the presentation. Then we'll talk about a lot of the theory about how IMS fits so naturally with XML. And then, of course, we'll go on to how you would use it, and I'll finish with a couple examples when we get there. So basically, what is XML and why is it so useful and taking off as successfully as it is today? Especially in the mainframe world that we live in, there's a big problem with transferring data back and forth between the mainframe world and the Wintel environment, particularly around encoding and byte ordering. And these are some of the areas that XML has really taken off and done well with. An XML document declares its encoding right at the top. In this example, I'll show you there's always a header at the top of every XML document, saying that this is an EBCDIC document. And therefore, if you're reading this in on a Windows machine, for instance, that's ASCII encoding, it knows that it needs to do the conversion. And this saves a lot of troubles, as well as byte ordering. The mainframe is a big endian environment, and the Intel architecture is a little endian. And this creates a lot of problems when you have byte ordering. This, as well, is handled by XML. By converting everything always into strings, it then needs to be parsed. So it's always the receiving end of a communication that is responsible for converting this into what makes sense in that environment. XML has a lot of other benefits. Self-describing is often talked about, so it's easy to read. Forces syntax level interoperability. One of the biggest things, though, is that it is standard. And so this is really being adopted. And one of the things I often heard and I really like is saying that XML documents have made life actually harder locally. When you talk about writing an application, now that it can handle XML coming in and going out, this has made your life actually harder because you have to convert from XML. You have to parse it and figure out what it means as well as building it. But it's made life much, much easier in this global environment of being able to now communicate outside of your own local environment. Especially in today's modern era, everything is very heterogeneous. A couple of the reasons why XML is really taking off. Okay, so moving on to slide 4, I have a slide talking about what an XML schema is. XML schemas are very important throughout this presentation, but particularly when it comes to IMS. IMS can only handle valid XML documents, and I'll talk about what that means. But an XML schema really just defines legal building blocks for an XML instance document. So, for instance, a schema may say that you have a purchase order and that the purchase order has a price And that price is always a currency, and so it always has two decimals, things like that. And I have a list of these on this slide talking about that. One of the things that's very important about an XML schema is it does essentially defines an agreed-upon communication contract. So if I know I'm going to be in communication with a business partner, if we agree on an XML schema that we're going to use for communicating back and forth to each other, then we always know that the documents that I receive match that schema and are exactly what I'm expecting. And this allows me to eliminate a lot of error conditions that may arise. So on slide 5, I have a little bit of an example. Kind of like I was saying with this purchase order example, this is an XML schema that lays out a presentation. So similar to what I'm doing today. This XML document, this schema, also has an XML header at the very top saying that this is UTF encoding. So all XML documents have that header. So you may ask as well, you know, an XML schema is, in fact, an XML document. Because of that, there is a schema defining all schemas. It gets a little confusing, but follow through on this example. We have an XML schema, and it's saying that the first element always is going to be a presentation. That presentation is made up of a complex type, having a sequence of a title, and a title is always a string, a length of the presentation, which is an integer, and it may have any number of presenters. So we have presenters here, min occurs 0, max occurs unbounded. This probably should say min occurs 1. It seems like you must at least have one speaker or presenter. But then the presenter has a last name and a first name, and we have a comments section, any number of comment sections, each one with a comment inside of it. Now, what's interesting is you can certainly take this schema and lay out a diagram of what it looks like, which we've done in the top right. And you can see, of course, that it's a hierarchical drawing of what that XML document is going to look like. Now, this is very important to recognize. XML documents are, in fact, hierarchical. And this, of course, is what we're really going to tie to IMS and what makes it really useful. One more slide on vocabulary. On slide 6, we have the definition, the difference between well-formed and valid XML documents. A well-formed document really just means it obeys the syntax rules of XML. Start tags always have end tags. All elements are properly nested, so you don't start two and then end them in a different order. Really just talking about syntax, that it can be parsed. Valid means that a document conforms to a particular schema. So how we laid it out, what a schema looks like. So this is again very important. I'll refer back to these quite a bit. On slide 7, and this slide I think fills itself out as an animation. What we have is a whole list of standards around XML that have evolved to give you an idea of how XML really is taking off in the industry. Looking down some of the standards on the left side, we have SACS and DOM, which are parsing standards, WSDL, which is for web services, we have XLink, XML encryption, XML schemas, as I mentioned, XQuery, which I'll talk about. So a whole lot of standards around XML that are coming out, and this is constantly being added to. And what as well is interesting is you have a lot of vocabularies or XML schemas for various areas in the industry. There are now XML schemas talking about how to do accounting, how to do astronomy, I mean, how to record, you know, astronomy information, chemistry. Some of the big ones then as well are finance and insurance. So for financial, in particular, in the middle there, shows you some of the major schemas that have evolved. I have an example at the very end of the presentation where I'll talk about SwiftNet in particular, which talks about how banks can communicate with each other through XML documents and what those schemas are. So SwiftNet is really just a collection of schemas of how banks communicate. And so if all banks conform to this schema, they know exactly what kind of information to expect, the ordering of the information, how to parse it. There's also a lot of open source XML parsers that are out there. All these things are making parsing XML and manipulating XML easier. Their goal, of course, as I mentioned, of how XML is actually more difficult locally. These are all aimed at making that transition easier so you can really reap the benefits of it being easier globally. If you go on to slide number 8, you may ask yourself at this point, So then that's great. That XML is so useful as communicating back and forth as a data interchange. But why do I want to actually store XML in databases and use an XML database? Why don't I just use the database that I have available, which in most cases is relational? There's two big reasons for this. The first one is physical storage benefits. And as I mentioned on the slide, it very much depends on how you want to use that data. I'll address this again later towards the end, but really if you think of it, the way XML can be stored, and it's a hierarchical document XML is, if I want to try to store that into a relational table, I need to set up a lot of referential integrity joins on my tables in order to store that XML document. And in doing so, a single document could be spread out across many tables and need to be joined in order to rebuild it. That's going to cause performance errors, or performance problems, rather, that the industry is doing a lot to address, but still comes down to a very difficult situation trying to store hierarchical data into a relational database. Now, I say very much depends on the type of data and how you're going to use it, because if your goal is to store that data and then data mine that for various relationships, well, then a relational database does still make sense. If your goal really is to store the XML and pull it back out and retrieve it, or just query it as XML, then XML databases really do make a big difference. One more other area, talking about storing data as relational rather than in a native XML database, is that the data, if the data is coming in as XML and out as XML, I don't want to have to deal with that need to convert back and forth from tables and columns into XML. I don't want somebody who wants to query that document to have to start now suddenly think about SQL and relational tables, but rather I want to be able to just view that XML and query that particular document, and as well as how all the standards fit on top of that XML schemas and XQuery, as we mentioned. So there's quite a few reasons why XML databases are useful. So slide number 9, at this point, hopefully this is echoing what you're thinking. You're thinking, okay, XML databases really sound ideal for handling data in this heterogeneous environment where I'm shifting data back and forth, and we all need to be able to communicate, and XML is a wonderful standard for that. You may then say, but isn't IMS already a world premier hierarchical database with nearly 40 years of proven experience? And I would come back by saying, absolutely it is. And finally, couldn't I just take my terabytes of existing IMS hierarchical data and just view it as XML when it fits? When it doesn't fit, I can still keep viewing it as IMS, traditional IMS. But when it makes sense to view it as XML, can't we just view it as XML? This is a wonderful idea and takes us exactly onto slide 10, where we're talking about what we did in IMS version 9. So in IMS version 9, we introduced a way exactly to view your IMS hierarchical database as if it were a collection of XML documents. Now, this has no change to your existing database, and rather what you have is, as this picture kind of shows on the bottom right, we really just have a mapping from hierarchical databases to a hierarchical XML schema, right? So a definition of how an XML document would look. Now, if you're a traditional IMS application, you can keep using IMS the way you always have on the right side of this chart. You can keep using it, viewing your segments as fields and traditional IMS types. However, if you're coming in with the intent to pull data out and communicate with other areas or other technologies, XML makes sense, and you can use the XML side. And again, this was introduced in IMS version 9 and has no additional charge. Okay, so moving on to slide 11, really what the slide shows is the real key of the XML database project is identifying this mapping between an XML schema, which is hierarchical, and your hierarchical IMS databases. The database is defined through DBDs and PSBs, whereas XML documents are defined through XML schemas, like we mentioned. The key, then, is to make this mapping. So we offer tooling that will take existing DBDs that you have today and generate an XML schema out of it. We're working on tooling as well that will take an XML schema and conversely generate a new IMS database that you can then use to store XML. Now, again, I'll address that again at the very end as one of the big use cases we have for taking brand new XML schema and creating new databases. So slide number 12. I don't want you to think that this is anything really new that we're adding on, and all this mapping that we're talking about would be adding a lot of complexity to IMS, because it's really nothing that IMS hasn't already been doing for 40 years. If you think of how an XML, or rather for an IMS hierarchy, how it's stored on disk, it's very serialized in a one-dimensional view. The DVDs, the PCBs, and the COBOL copybooks or PL1 copybooks you have give it that hierarchical look. IMS then treats it as a hierarchy, yet while on disk it's really this one-dimensional array of bytes. The XML schema we're adding is just a new form of metadata that allows you to take the hierarchical model and turn it now into an XML model. The term the XML industry uses for this data model is the XQuery 1.0 and XPath 2.0 data model. But the idea is we're just adding a little more hierarchical information and some tags, as I'll go through, to create this little more complex view. So on slide 13, as I mentioned, the important thing is that this all is about the metadata. So we have two types of metadata that I'll talk about. Traditionally, IMS has always had two in this physical metadata area. There's the DBD, which defines segment sizes, the hierarchy of the segments, as well as certain searchable fields. It's really the COBOL copybooks, or PL1 copybooks in that sense, that actually make sense out of this data, giving it new names, field types, lengths, encoding, this kind of information. What we're adding is a new type of metadata. This structural metadata, as I mentioned, is an XML schema. So on slide 14, there's a bit of an animation that shows when you have a DVD, what we know about an actual IMS segment is the length of that segment and perhaps a couple fields. One may be a key, one may be a search field. And that's really all we know. When IMS fills that area, after we make a get unique call or a get next call, we use the COBOL copybook to define the names for the fields and what their types are. Finally, it's the XML schema that then allows us to rearrange this and add tags. So in this sense, we've taken what IMS treats as just a bunch of bytes and turned it into an XML document that follows along with all the rules that we mentioned earlier, and again, gets all the benefits. So there's no byte ordering, there's no encoding problems. We've turned an IMS segment into this XML fragment. The next page shows, again, as a running animation, that shows how we can turn then an entire IMS tree or an IMS record into an XML document, following these same sorts of rules. We reference the XML schema to learn the ordering of how to build this XML document, and we build, in the end, we build this XML document. We refer to this as decomposed mode. So slide 16 talks about decomposed mode, and what we're really doing is shredding XML into a traditional IMS hierarchy. When we do that, the documents are always parsed and always validated, because we can only store XML documents that are valid to that schema that we created. We convert it into typically traditional types, so therefore if you have an existing application or a new COBOL application that treats IMS the way IMS is always treated for the last 40 years, that can still work. The data, once it's stored, is completely transparent that it's XML and it's searchable through traditional IMS means. Slide 17 and 18 both talk about how we lay out this mapping. If you have an XML or an IMS database and you want to convert it into an XML schema, our tooling will follow a very simple mapping where it basically adds segment name tags and turns each field into an element. This is very straightforward and is very common if you just already have an IMS database to create a schema. One of the problems is if you're coming the other way around. If you're coming from an XML schema and you want to create an IMS database, your schema may not be so straightforward. And so slide 18 talks about complex XML structuring that we offer. And this is really just having a different way of viewing your IMS database as XML. And you can see in this sense, which I've almost intentionally made hard to see the mapping, it doesn't really look like the original IMS structure. Although, however, if you were to store this information, it would make sense that in this case, all the blue ones are in a one-to-one relationship to each other, and the orange ones are in one-to-many relationship to those blue ones. So in this case, you have essentially two instances of this FGH segment. So this works very well for, as we mentioned, decomposed documents, when the XML document matches that IMS structure very well. But going back to some more vocabulary for XML, there's really two general types of XML documents. There's data-centric, which is very much what IMS is used to, the kind of data. It's highly structured data. All the fields have limited size. All the types are strongly typed. Order really doesn't typically matter. Again, if I have a purchase order, the fact that my name comes before the price doesn't really matter at all. So order doesn't matter. Instances of data-centric documents may be invoices, purchase orders, or parts listings, things like that. But there's a whole other breed of XML documents that are coming onto the scene, and this is what's really driving a lot of the XML database movement, and this is document-centric. This is where you have things like newspaper articles, manuals. These are loosely structured. It's hard to really put a nice, definite schema on them. And as a result, IMS isn't very well tailored towards this kind of document. So data-centric is really what IMS is focused on. But, of course, we need to be able to handle the case where you do have some loosely structured information. So slide 20 talks about intact storage. And in intact storage, we're offering a different way to store XML. In this case, we're not actually parsing your document or validating it against the schema. We store the XML with tags and all directly into the IMS database. Slide 21 kind of shows you how this happens. And again, this is an animation going the other way. Basically, what we're doing is breaking the IMS document up into sizable chunks, and we write this XML directly into the IMS segments. We have as many overflow segments as we need to handle the size of the document. As you may know, IMS can only handle a segment size of up to 32K. So if your document's larger than that, it needs to be broken up into these smaller segments. The problem with this method, of course, is that once the XML is stored inside of IMS, it can't easily be interpreted by an IMS, a typical IMS application, especially if this is storing the raw Unicode support into IMS, which, by the way, is an advantage of IMS because IMS, like I mentioned earlier, doesn't know what kind of encoding it's storing. IMS just knows it's storing bytes. So in this intact case, we can go ahead and store the Unicode encoding XML straight into IMS. The problem, as I mentioned, was that you don't know how to query this. I mean, this is kind of hidden only to XML-aware applications. Slide 22 gives us a little way around this. We've added support for what we're calling side segments in an intact document. What we're doing in this case is we're identifying ahead of time certain fields in the XML or certain elements in the XML that we're storing that we may want to search on later. So for in this case, we may have an XML document, and we may know that we want to query a dealer's name out of that database. So we would actually parse the XML document as we're storing it into the database, and we'll pull out the name and maybe certain customers' last names. We'll pull them out and store them in side segments in IMS. We then build secondary indexes on these segments. And now we can quickly search through a large collection of XML documents, all stored intact in an IMS database, to get to right to the document that we care most about. Now, one of the advantages of intact storage is that retrieving the document doesn't require us to need to add tags. We don't really need to parse an XML schema to do any of that. We pull the data straight out of IMS, and there we have our XML document. Slide number 23 gives you an example of what this intact storage with side segments might look like. At runtime, again, we're parsing through the XML document, and we identify where certain fields exist, or certain elements. We define those elements by using an XPath expression. So for in this case, the way XPath works, and I'm not sure if people are familiar with this, XPath was invented basically as a way to reference into an XML document. So we have two examples in this case. We're looking for an A element, which is inside of underneath a B element, which then has an F4 element underneath that. And as you can see in this little example document we have on the left, there's two cases of that. And as we parse through those two are identified and stored as side segments. There's also maybe another expression that we've identified, which is this AEF1. And in that case, there weren't any of those, and so, of course, we don't have any side segments. These side segments are stored as traditional IMS types. So if they're EBCDIC, they can be converted to ASCII, so they can be searched more easily. And then, of course, this is just taking advantage of the things IMS has been doing and does very well, which is building side segments, handling hierarchies and storing them, and keeping them locally together on disk so they can easily be fetched and pulled back out. The next slide talks about decomposed versus intact, the two types I mentioned. So decomposed works very well with data-centric storage. This is all the things that IMS is really traditionally good at. Strongly typed data where we know what the structure looks like. We also have intact, which is, again, for document-centric. Now, these two can be combined where you can have decomposed down to a certain point, at which point you may not care anymore for searching it or stripping off the tags and storing it that way. So we can go from decomposed into intact, although it probably makes sense then that we can't go the other way around. Once you kind of start storing intact, it's very difficult to then switch back to decomposed, and of course we don't support that. So on slide 25 now, we're in another transition, and we're saying, this is all wonderful. What I've talked about of how to store XML and IMS and how IMS has really didn't have to do anything different from what it's been doing and what it's been really tuned for over the last four decades. XML fits very well. But what we've been talking about is all the internals. How do you actually use it? There's two things that need to be done in order to use XML database today. For one, we need to generate that metadata. I mentioned how important that is, and that's what we use in order to query IMS, as well as to build the XML documents out of it. We have a tool called the DLI Model Utility, and this tool is freely downloadable as well. It's able to parse your DBDs and PSBs and create a meta model, really a model of what your IMS database looks like. Slide 27 shows once that tool has parsed it, it can also show you a graphical view. Now, this graphical view is useful beyond just people interested in XML database or in coding Java applications, as I'll talk about. But as well, we've had customers very interested in just getting these views so they have a nice graphical view of what their IMS databases look like. I know there are some text-based tools that will show this, but we've had a lot of real support for this tooling as well. Beyond just showing you what your hierarchy looks like and allowing you to edit names and give it more, to get beyond the 8-character all uppercase names, things like that, we will generate the XML schema for you. So slide 28 shows you that, and off on the right we show you a little hierarchical view of what that XML schema looks like. And again, once this is generated, this is pretty much the contract saying, this is what data coming out of my database looks like, and anything that matches the schema, any document that's valid to this schema, I can store in my IMS database. So the next part, on slide 29, we talk about the interface. The XML database project has been implemented as a collection of Java libraries. So what that means is the transformation is all happening in Java, and so this is available today only running from Java environments. Now, IMS supports 4 Java environments that can access the database today. Since version 7, I believe, we've supported all 4 of these. We have IMS inside of an IMS-dependent region. We have JMPs and JBPs. We have KIX regions, which come in through the draw into IMS. and as well DB2 stored procedures in WebSphere. WebSphere EJBs are, of course, very exciting because of all the emphasis around WebSphere and the emphasis around the support for XML documents inside of WebSphere, be this through SOAP calls, which are, of course, need to be XML in, XML out. WebSphere and DB2 both come in through ODBA. So all of these are available. They must be on the same LPAR as your IMS data, which is a restriction today with IMS. So given we're in a Java environment, we offer a JDBC driver. And slide 31 shows you an example kind of JDBC call that we could make to IMS that supports XML database. What we've done is we've added two new user-defined functions, a retrieve XML call and a store XML call. I'll give you a little example of how this works. So in this slide, we have on the far left, we have a database definition saying it has three segments. We have an A segment, a B segment, and a C segment. We can create a query where we're showing a select retrieve XML where the C segment has a particular field called 35. And as the animation shows, there's two of those fields. On the retrieve XML, we passed in the A segment, which says I want to move up to the A segment when I've found my matching criteria. We call this the XML context, and this becomes important when we look to XQuery and how we've added support for that. But really, from that XML context, that's where we're invoking essentially the decomposed or the intact, and the application doesn't need to know how the data is actually stored. But we're invoking those routines to build an XML document out of that hierarchical tree that we're positioned over. The next slide just shows you how, conversely, we do an insert. We can insert into that root segment A, and we can store an XML document. Now, in JDBC terms, the result of a retrieve returns you a clob, a character large object that then, of course, you can serialize or you can read from and send off across the internet or manipulate right there. As well, it's a prepared statement where you insert a clob on an insert. That's just how you manipulate the XML once you're in your application. The next slide, slide number 33, now takes a step forward and we start talking about XQuery. In IMS version 10, we've introduced support for a good number of the calls for XQuery, or a good percentage of XQuery support. XQuery was designed really around creating a way to properly query collections of XML data. And in IMS's case, this is exactly what we have. We have a bunch of IMS records, all viewed as a collection of XML documents. It's semantically similar to SQL, and in fact, it was one of the prime contributors to XQuery. Works here at IBM. At the Almaden Research Center, and was also primarily responsible for the creation of SQL as well. So they're very similar. XQuery 1.0 became a W3C, that's the World Wide Web Consortium recommendation, in January of last year. XQuery is a more natural fit for querying hierarchical data, which is why it fits so well with IMS again. We view it as powerful because it enables customers to leverage an emerging skill set. XQuery is now being taught at universities across the country, as is XML databases, which is ironic, although they don't call those databases IMS very often. But as you can see, this certainly adds IMS to that set of XML databases. We also see a big potential for enhanced product and tooling support. Basically, if you could take an XML schema view of an IMS database, and now I can write a standard XQuery call against that, I can use tools such as XML Spy that will allow me to create XML documents, or any of the other number of XML tools, particularly the ones IBM is producing, that can now apply to IMS where we've been lacking in tooling support in the past. Again, XQuery works transparently on existing IMS databases because we're not actually changing any of the data in the database. We're just adding another view to it. Slide 34 really just addresses a little bit of the history and how we view XQuery as bringing together a lot of this. We have, in the beginning, there was really just 1968 IMS, and we had a hierarchical database. DL1 was the query language. As you click through this animation, the first step now shows you in the 80s, relational databases really became popular. And SQL took over as the standard way to access data in databases. We have IMS worked very hard then to create SQL interfaces to it. I mean, you saw how initially our XQuery implementation or our XML database implementation is built on top of our JDBC SQL interface. There's also Information Integrator Classic Federation, which is aimed at allowing you to query IMS databases with SQL. However, there is always a problem, and the problem is using a relational query language against a hierarchical database model doesn't fit naturally. So we have a lot of trouble with that. This is termed an impedance mismatch in research communities. And when XML really started taking over, and as you click forward, it shows the appearance of XQuery. They created XML views of relational databases, and of course we have our XML database, which came out in version 9. XQuery, they ran into the same impedance mismatch, because XQuery is a hierarchical query language. And they had a lot of trouble mapping that to relational. As a result, some companies, IBM being one of them, created basically a hierarchical data store that could handle new XML documents to properly handle XML in the ways that I mentioned why there were difficulties storing XML into relational tables. And they completed the path of then having SQL access those hierarchical. That's along the lines of something called SQL XML, which I don't want to get into here. But now in version 10, we're offering XQuery support to IMS. And you can see how XQuery now can run against both relational tables. In DB2's case, it can run against DB2, and this is DB2Z as well. Although right now DB2's port is really mainly focused on XPath, but expanding onto XQuery as we move ahead. And now as well, IMS. So XQuery becomes this unifying language. Slide 35, I don't want to get into too much, but shows you just generally what an XQuery expression can look like. It follows this construct of for, let, where, order, by, return, and the acronym, of course, there is flower, and that makes XQuery expressions often referred to as flower expressions. One of the more powerful things of XQuery is that, similar to how SQL queried tables and gave you a result table, XQuery queries collections of XML and often gives you XML results. I think we have a bit of an example later, so I will leave that, but you can look at this slide again later. Slide 36, we're extending the JDBC interface. Again, as I mentioned earlier in when we talked about XML database, it was all about establishing this XML context that we were going to build our XML document out of. We make the same sort of call, and in this time, our XML context, we issue an XQuery on that. So this query as well would still find the 35s using traditional IMS SSAs defined. We'll move ourselves up to this A segment at the top. From there, we'll run this XML or this XQuery expression, producing our XML result, which then, of course, we could send to in a business-to-business operation or even a business-to-consumer, where we can then pass it through XSL and show it as web pages or whatever we need in this case. Slide 37 shows you as well how we can make our XQuery context as the entire database if we wish, by simply saying that we're going to select retrieve XML from the entire PCB. We can make that context the very top. Now we're running XQuery against the entire database and across all data in the database. And this, of course, is powerful as far as enabling you to just simply think of IMS as an XML database and only issuing XQuery expressions against it. Okay, so moving on to slide number 38. So we come back to the idea of why XML databases to kind of wrap up this area before I move on to a final example. As I mentioned before, it really does depend on the type of data you're storing. If you're storing data and the intention is to data mine this and to expose relationships that exist, relational databases make a lot of sense. However, if you're storing it as an XML document and you want to be able to query it as an XML document, you want to be able to view it as an XML document and retrieve it, then XML databases really do make a lot of sense. Slide 39 gives you an example. So I pulled this out of the relational community saying XML databases are a better choice than relational in these instances. And this is when they suggest that even the relational community suggests. This is cases where storing XML in relational doesn't make sense. And to look at some of these, when data is inherently hierarchical or nested in nature, this, like medical data, bill of materials, and as well the second one, when data sets with sparsely populated attributes, this is where it makes a lot of sense to use hierarchical databases. And this is really IMS's strength. This is what IMS has been tuned and aimed at supporting for over 40 years and where it really does come into play. Now, the last three all deal with the idea of changing schemas. And really, this is what is pushing. As I mentioned, that intact document idea, the document-centric, in that case, this is where XML databases really came about, but not really the area where IMS fits so well. If you're frequently changing your schema, IMS can't keep up very well. Now, like I said, we do support this intact model, and you can do database reorgs and change the structure of your IMS database, but it's not particularly the easiest way to do it. So here you'll see where IMS really excels. Is in these first two, and as well as I think I've mentioned several times, when you have the ability to view your data as IMS and run traditional IMS COBOL applications against your data at the same time as running new best-of-breed applications to run against an XML database. So I want to spend the last few minutes talking about an example that we came upon that I worked with a customer last year on, and this is related to the single European payment area, which may have a lot in common with what a lot of the people on the call are working with today. And this is a proof of concept that we worked on. Slide 41 shows you that long list of standards again, going back to that SwiftNet example. This is a wonderful example as well because it's not initially what we intended the use for XML database to be, but it fits very well. What we had was a customer who needed to transition from the old way of doing Swift, which they stored in an IMS database, and they ran against the IMS database with the results of a Swift message, running their COBOL applications and processing that message. They now need to transition into a case where now they're supporting XML coming in. It's still pretty much the same data, but now it's formatted as XML. So they have the SwiftNet XML schemas. And if you move on to slide 42, they had a list of requirements that they felt they needed to do to support. And what they were trying to do is take in the new one, the new XML, stored into an IMS database in that decomposed format that would strip off all the tags. Once it was in IMS, they knew they could count on IMS for all of its reliability, its performance, and as well, all the logging support would help with auditing, everything they needed, everything that IMS had again been tuned for. That's what they need to get there. As well, once it was there, they could run traditional IMS COBOL applications, ones that they already had that they just needed to tweak a little. The new standards that they had, or that they wanted to meet with this proof of concept, and I'm happy to say we actually did meet it, was they were going to potentially get in a 250 megabyte size zip file. In there would be uncompressed a 10 gigabyte XML document with up to 10 million instructions of payment instructions that they needed to process. They wanted to do this within an hour, which was to take that document, store it into an IMS database, and then start processing it. Once it was in IMS, they could parallelize like crazy by running applications, running against all of these payments that needed to be made. They wanted, of course, easy and near linear scalability, which of course is really synonymous with Z, but as well falls over to IMS as well. The next slide shows their proposal of what they wanted to do. And this was, again, taking in that zip file, unzipping it, and using our Java applications to store that into an IMS database. Now, one of the problems they had was with the XML schema coming from SwiftNet, they needed to create a new IMS database. And there was no tool at the time able to do that. And as I've mentioned, this is one of the areas we're really working on so that we can take that XML document and create those new databases. But once they had the data into IMS, they could run it with traditional COBOL applications, run their own validation, and likewise go the other way. Now when they wanted to go outbound and talk to a business partner in this case, with that XML document matching that SwiftNet schema, they could populate an IMS database, and then they could essentially make that retrieve XML call, pulling that data out as an XML document, valid to that schema, zip it up, and send it out to their business partners. And I think this is a wonderful example because it does show all the strengths of IMS, as well as how at the same time they're using the native interface, starting to use this XML interface as well, and how the two can work together really in an advantage that no other database can offer. So with that, I'll conclude my talk, and I'll hand it back to the operator so that we can field questions.
Thank you, Chris. Now we'd like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. After the survey, we will have a live question and answer session with our presenter. Now your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer the questions. Now to participate, please press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Let's get started. Question one. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to respond. And now question two. How was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Once again, we'll pause for just a moment. Question 3. What version of IMS are you on? If it is version 9, press star 1. If it is version 8, press star 2. And for version 7 and below, press star 3. And now question 4. What is your current planned use of IMS 10? If currently have IMS 10, press star 1. If plan to install IMS 10 over the next year, press star 2. If interested in IMS 10 in the future, press star 3. If not interested in IMS 10, press star 4. Once again, we will pause for just a moment. And our final question today. First of all, we'd like to let you know that we hope you enjoy today's teleconference. Please let us know if you're interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1, and if no, star 2. And that does conclude our survey for today. Thank you again for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please remember, if you are using a speakerphone, to turn off your mute function before signaling for a question. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question. Let's pause for just a moment. And our first question comes from Mainline Information Systems, Mamie Sheen.
Hi, this is a great presentation. Thank you very much. I just have one quick question. I want to verify that if any of our customers are looking for the XML query function, they can skip version 9 and go directly to 10.
And yes, that should be absolutely true. There's no need. They need to go through 9 for the XML or XQuery stuff.
Okay, great.
Cool.
Thank you.
With one question remaining, once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. And moving on now to Ian Bailey, TD Financial Group.
Hello. Once again, great presentation. Just have one question in terms of development tools on the Java side, such as Hibernate, use of data sources and things like that. Is there any support which would actually be able to support similar to DB2 in terms of constructing the select insert statements and things like that?
We don't have anything as far as tools, particularly like Hibernate and stuff. I mean, for building the SQL, we don't have tools for that. Tools like RAD certainly help. As far as basically just Java programming and building and getting the code onto the mainframe. RDZ is another tool to really help development there.
Okay.
But not along the same lines yet, I'll say.
Okay, because that would be very appealing. I would have thought in terms of having really a consolidated tool which would be able to look at all kinds of databases irrespective of type.
Yeah, I think there's definitely potential. In an area we're definitely looking into.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question.
With no further questions in our queue, Mr. Holtz, I'll turn the conference back over to you for additional or closing remarks.
All right, I just want to thank everybody for calling in. This is an exciting area for IMS in a new area that I think we can really exploit, and we've really just started doing that. If anyone has any other questions, my email address is at the very first slide. Feel free to send me an email with really any questions you have or comments or suggestions or even hate mail, but I hopefully don't get the letter. Thank you very much.
That does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. Have a great day.